Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. As always, I'm your host, Eric. With me is my co-host, Ray.
Hello.
And special guest filling in for Don this week is Josh. How are you?
Hey, I am fantastic. Thanks a lot for having me here.
Thanks for being here. Appreciate you filling in. Yeah, Don's off being an adult for once, so we want to congratulate him on that huge success and look forward to having him back soon. Lots to go over this week. We've had more revealed about the Blackstone Fortress and actually how it relates to 40K. We've had three large tournaments to talk about and a little bit of a throwaway comment we're going to make made by Reese doing the Signals from the Frontline podcast. And we're going to expand on that, thinking about our hopes and wishes for chapter approved. So we'll get to that a little bit later in the show. Meanwhile, let's venture deep into the Black Fortress. So more this came out, the more little goodies they didn't expect. I was expecting another kind of, Talisman, the board game for 40K. And this turns out to be some pretty neat stuff. So right off the bat, the internet darling, at least looks-wise, is Obsidius Malix, or Malix. He's the Chaos Lord that's included in the set. And at first, it sounds really cool. It's a Chaos Lord, pretty much same stat line, same skills, with a Thunder Hammer. And I was like, yes, a Chaos version of Becky, until I realized he doesn't have a jump pack.
Wow. Well, I guess he's got to hop in the Rhino like everyone else.
The Rhino, I guess, or maybe even a Land Raider. Maybe he'll bring Land Raiders back.
Land Raider, yeah. Well, I mean, Knights are going away a little bit. They got their foot out the door, so the humble Rhino will hopefully make its return.
Yeah, I was thinking between just toying around with another list maybe for next season already, but like a humble Rhino Rush compared with Chaos Undivided, or basically the all-purpose non-chapter where you get to advance and charge. I was like, that'd be kind of cool coming out of tanks. So I don't know.
Yeah, before the Knights came around, I was doing, you know, Khorne Berserkers popping out of the Rhino. You get the, you know, get the extra 3 or 4 inch movement, warp time. You can cover a lot of ground with that. But just being able to advance and charge with the Renegade tactic is pretty Gucci.
The Renegades, that's what it was. Yeah, I like that. I'm a big fan of the Fallen, and I was thinking like, okay, I can, you know, kit them up for close combat, but I don't know. Wasn't quite there yet with Kniggets. All right. The other characters involved, I'll give a little preview, is next one is Thaddeus the Purifier. This would be the Ministrone Priest that comes along. So they're saying that he's going to be included in the Sisters of Battle Army, yet to be released in Chapter Approved as a beta codex. But I could have swore regular Priest did this, so maybe I'm just mistaken, but he has a war hymn. Add 1 to the attack characteristics off all friendly Adeptus Ministrum infantry and Adeptus Militarum infantry units within 6 inches of any friendly priest. So I was like, huh, well, I don't know how that's special to him, but still handy.
Do you think you'll see him on the tabletop anytime soon?
Unless he has something else floating around in there. I think the hardest part too, same thing with Odysseus Malix was, or Malix, I keep calling him Malix for some, sounds like a laxative product. They made detachments really hard to take.
Oh yeah.
The good news is if you take pretty much everything that's in the box, it doesn't count. It's pretty much a one unit detachment type thing, but it was a little confusing. I have to kind of plug and play, would try some sample lists. I don't know that much about Sisters of Battle other than they're fairly quick and load a ton of Melta. So I'm like, okay. And I don't remember, other than Sister Repentas, how good they were in close combat. And I remember them being very hit or miss. So I'm not sure. I don't know how to answer that quite yet. The other character, which is kind of neat here, is the Hayak the Grek, who is the Kroot Tracker. And he is an elite's choice for Tau armies. And He's capable of targeting. He's a sniper, so he can target character models, even if they're not the closest unit, and he can lay down booby traps similar to Marbo. So I'll read this verbatim. Concealed booby traps. Once per battle at the end of your opponent's movement phase, you can choose the enemy unit on the battlefield and roll d6. Subtract 1 if it's character, add 1 if it contains 10 or more models. On a 4+, that unit suffers d3 mortal wounds. On a 7+, it suffers d6 mortal wounds. And so no line of sight, no range, just you guys over there, watch your step. Whoops, too late. Be kind of neat, kind of interesting. I don't know if it's D3 mortal wounds. I mean, it could be neat against like that, you know, backfield objective holder, or if you kind of nail down a vehicle and you're like, God, it still has 2 wounds left, really? Yeah, let's try and take it out.
Yeah, kind of gives them an option, I guess, to advance up the board and maybe punch some objectives. Because Tau normally just kind of hang out in the back and shoot you off the table, don't they?
For the fair amount, bringing back the 8 is more of a forward thrusting unit. You know, they kind of go forward and lay down a whole lot of fire in your grill type thing. You know, more of a Farsight was always known for that. Even the old Farsight bodyguards when they didn't use the 8. There's also a couple tactics where the Storm Surge would come up and use their happy feet. So it varies. So I'd be curious to see what the new character codex, what comes out. I've always used highly more mobile. This I never was a big fan of gun lines, but you know, all good ideas there. Josh, you mentioned earlier, before we were recording, also the Man of Iron has been confirmed as that's what that large robot is.
Yep. We got some tasty lore coming at us. Apparently the Men of Iron are still kicking around, at least this guy. From what I read, I guess he's pretending to be from Mars, or he's pretending to be one of those guys. So we'll see where that goes. But I'm pretty excited for that.
And interesting, we had Imperial Navigator. I'm not sure what rules they'll bring towards the kind of the big scheme of things. Like yourself, you mentioned you had Khorne Berserkers. I actually had Beastmen I'd converted to look like Khorne Berserkers. Now I'm like, oh, I guess that's not going to work anymore. So I was curious to see what their stats were. And they were kind of neat. Kind of have the old school Furious Charge where they're +1 attack, +1 strength on the charge. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, all right. And they had some odd, give me 1 sec, I can look it up.
Yeah, they're pretty much watered down Zangors, aren't they? I mean, they have more attacks. I think on the charge they have like 3.
That sounds about right.
3 attacks maybe?
That's what I was looking at. No AP on that. I could have swore they had an AP like a -1 or -2. Wasn't as good as Bloodletters, but it was pretty good. May not have been. Okay. I can't find it quick enough here. But it was neat. So it's like good to see them in back in play, because I've got 20 of them. So I actually used them.
Oh, there you go.
Ray, anything to catch your eye from that nifty box set?
I'm actually pretty big on the Chaos Lord.
He's a pretty juicy model. I mean, I looked at that. I was like, man, how do I wear this? I said the other. I was like, I know tactically you really needed, you know, the jump pack, but like I said, there may be other ways to deliver him. So,
yeah. I also like the fact that they're just making the Chaos Space Marines Primaris size. They're not trying to figure out any reason to do it. They're just
doing it. Exactly.
Chaos makes you small, I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting that the Black Legionnaires are primary size. I was like, interesting. Again, just want my chosen models. Please bring back some. Poor magnetized conversions are showing their age. So that is all the news coming from Games Workshop this week. After the break, we'll go over three tournaments, including the Mighty Warzone Atlanta and Du Bois GT, right after the break.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
I can't believe I really said, do Tao just sit back and shoot. That's so dumb.
Well, I mean, they do unless you're the Yavara.
Right. Yeah. I'm just like, wow, did I really say that? We can make a joke about that when we get back from the commercial.
Welcome back after the break. Our first GT level event from the weekend is the Mythicos Veterans Day weekend event in, I believe it was Harrison, New York. Make sure I get that down. No, excuse me, Roxbury Township, New Jersey. You know what they say about it. It's nice this time of year. So your top eight looks something like this. You starting in eighth place, we have Luke McCarthy with Ulathe. Seventh place, Nathan Volpe with Adeptus Custodes. Sixth place, Brandon McCowan with Necrons. Simon Ward comes in fifth place with Tau Empire. But he just stood back and shoot.
Can't believe I said that, but
Necrons,
you know,
with Travis, oh boy, Suburvi. Travis, I hope I pronounced your last name right. Nice job coming in fourth. Third place, Jared Freeman with Imperial Knights. Second place, Dallas Rappaport with High Fleet Kraken. And your 2018 Mythicos Veterans Day Weekend champion is Eric Trock with Katagen Jungle Fighters. So interesting event. Top four actually all went 4-1. Eric Trock was able to beat them out on points. And it was a pretty significant spread there. He actually had a 61-point lead over fourth-place Travis Suburvi. And Eric Trock is starting to make a name for himself late in the season here, making a late run at the ITC Top 10.
It's the end of the season already?
We're probably looking, at least they've got Renegade GT next weekend, and then it kind of dies out with Thanksgiving and Christmas. And then all of a sudden there's like this mad scramble for events right before LVO, which is it's February 8th. Yeah, the second weekend in February. So we're kind of coming to the bitter end. We're in the fourth quarter, that's for sure. So,
oh man, I got to stop messing around.
Yeah. So looking at Eric's list real quick, he's one of the few that actually uploaded from this particular event. He's got a brigade of Katagen Jungle Fighters. He's got Colonel Strachan and two company commanders, six infantry squads, Astropath, a Militarum Priest, Ogryn Squad. Does not say specifically how many he has in there. Three Artema patterned Hellhounds, three Heavy Weapon Squads, all Mortars. Second attachment is the Supreme Command of Adeptus Custodes with three Shield Captains on Dawn Eagle Bikes. Surprise, surprise. And then last but not least, a Super Heavy Auxiliary Detachment with a Knight Castellan. Yeah, the pretty much the new Brandon Grant optimized list of
the IG bread and butter.
So that was our top finishers from Mythicos Veterans Day weekend. We're gonna go up the street to Henrietta, New York for the Du Bois GT. This is one of the longer running tournaments, one of the very first independent events. Actually, it was nice to see them still kicking around. So their top eight for 2018 looks something like this. Ken Coryal with Tau Sept coming in 8th place. XR Exodar with High Fleet Kraken. I wonder if that's really his name. Anyway, Samuel Lucidi with Death Guard. In 5th place, Devin Swan with Tau Empire. 4th place, David Pesci with Black Legion. 3rd place, TJ Lanigan. Haven't heard from him in a while. Nice to see him grace the top 8 with Nurgle Demons. William Kinn came in second with Chaos Demons, and in first place with Gene Stealer Cult. Nick Rose goes a perfect 5-0 and able to beat out also 5-0 William Kinn for the championship.
Well, looks like a looks like a good weekend for Chaos.
Good weekend for Chaos, and quite a few Tau in there as well. So I'm curious what's going on in there.
And lots of Nids, too. I know we'll see Nids in the next GT we talk about, but...
So Nick pretty much brought the same list he brought to SoCal that we talked about in previous things, but in case you missed last week's episode, shame. Go back and listen to it, but we'll read it again. Starts with a battalion of High Fleet Kraken, 3 Neurothropes, a unit of 16 Gene Stealers, and 2 3-man Whipper Swarms. It's hard to say for some reason. Then comes in with a Gene Stealer Cult Detachment, also battalion, 2 Magi, 3 units of Neophyte Hybrids, 2 units of 5 Aberrants, and a unit of 15 Pure Strain G-Stealers, as well as 1, 2, 3 Cult Chimeras. Then he adds a Supreme Command Detachment, also G-Stealer Cult, 2 Abominants, and an Acolyte Icon Ward, and 2 Primuses. So obviously this list is working for Nick, as he is continuing to work his way up into the ITC top 10 with this. But he's not changed this list much at all week over week.
Yeah. Do you think you're seeing a rise in Nids with the decrease in Knight players running around?
I don't know I think it might be the other lists have decreased the Knights, which has opened the door for the Nids rather than that way around. Because as I'm looking at this, I'll be honest, I need to double check. I know Abominants are a close combat unit. I'm not familiar with the Primus other than the band. So I'm kind of like, I'm not sure what they do. I have to look that one up. And
yeah,
but I know, you know, Aberrants with power picks and power hammers can do damage to a Knight, and they still have that Cult Ambush ability. They could still do damage against, you know, a lone Knight. I don't know if they're going to do well against, like, you know, the trio.
Yeah. I feel Nids do really well against Eldar, and they were mostly untouched by the latest updates. But then, you know, with the orcs coming out, I think orcs give Nids a bad day. So,
Ray, what do you think? How's it been working for? Why do you think this, to see the rise of the Nid?
I just think people are finding ways to use them to their advantage.
Yeah, there's a lot of combos in the book, and I think some of your people are finally opening the idea. But interesting, I just looked at the other Nid list that made the top 8. Kind of compare and contrast here. High Fleet Kraken in the 1st Battalion, Malathrope Swarm Lord, 2 units of 20 Gene Stealers, and a unit of 30 Termagants, which is, we've seen that a lot with that, you know, that super speed, being able to charge across the table. And then another battalion, a High Fleet Crack with a Hive Tyrant, Neurothrope, and then 3 units of 10 Termagants, which looks like to be more of his, I'll take that back. That might be more of his scream, because after that, he's got another battalion of High Fleet Kronos, 2 Neurothropes, and 3 units of 3 Ripper Swarms, with an elite guard of Hive Guard of 6. So the Hive Guard, they usually stand back and kind of deal with like Dark Reapers all the time. Ripper Swarms are obviously going to camp into objectives. So maybe that Termagant screen's there to provide an extra layer. I'm not sure. But I agree that this list seems to be a lot less optimized against Knights. It's a neat new feature here. If you haven't checked this out, if you click on someone's name in the standings, it actually gives each of his pairings round by round, so you can see how he did.
Oh.
It's kind of neat. So, sure enough, first round was against Death Guard. Second round was against Chaos. Lots of Demon Prince and lots of Cultists. Third round was Dark Eldar. Fourth round looks like he had a bye. And then fifth round, Space Marines. So he was able to dodge the Knight problem. So we'll never really know for sure how he would have done. Let's take a look at Nick Rose in comparison there. Nick played a Knight player right in the first round with, ouch. There's a throwback list here. 2 Armagers, 1 Knight Valiant, and followed by a Fire Raptor gunship.
Wow. That's old school.
That's old school. That's nasty. And then in the second round, he played Josh Death's Harlequin list, which is pretty much unchanged from what we talked about last week, in case you guys weren't following again. Starts with an Outrider detachment, took a mixed unit of two Succubi, a unit of six Reavers, and then he took a battalion of Harlequins with a Veiled Path mask form, featuring a Shadow Seer, a Troop Master, a Gargantuan squad of troops. Hang on one second here. One, two, three. One unit of five with two caresses and two kisses and a blade. Then a unit of 10 with four kisses and six caresses. And then another unit of five with two caresses, two kisses, and a blade. Follows it up with a solitaire and then two units of four Skyweavers, Haywire Cannon, and Zephyr Glaives. Starweaver Transport. Two of those, sorry, it's page break there. And then he adds a Vanguard detachment with a Shadow Seer and three Death Jesters and another Starweaver.
It's pretty cool.
Interesting. I've tried that Vanguard thing I did two Jesters and a Solitaire, and I had very little success with it, so I'm curious to see what he does differently with it. So.
Right. Well, it didn't work against Nick, because it looks like he pulled out a 41-point win on that one.
Yeah.
My round three is showing Nick versus nobody. Did that person drop, or what happened?
That's what I'm trying to find out as well, because there was also a bye with the last gentleman I was looking at. Then Devin Swan took Tau. Looks like your typical, three Riptides and a ton of Farsight Marksmen to load up on Marker Lights. And then he played Sam in the final round, which is another Chaos player. Wow, Necrosis the Undying. Haven't seen him in forever. Good old Forge old character there.
Ooh, he's got some Contemptor Dreadnoughts running around.
Interesting.
With the Butcher Cannons, yeah. That's super interesting.
So a little bit of a creativity at the boys GT. Glad to see it, because it's nice to see this shake up the meta a little bit. So we're going to go on to our last tournament of the weekend, which was Warzone Atlanta. If you listen to Forge the Narrative podcast, you've heard a lot about this event. They do use their own scoring system, their own mission, so it's a little bit different, but it's still an ITC event, so we want to talk about it. So we'll start with the top eight from Warzone Atlanta. A tie for seventh place to start things up between Will Taylor, who played Tau Empire, and Colin Watts, who played Thousand Suns. Sixth place, Mark Perry with Death Guard. Fifth place, Stefan Mitchell with Alpha Legion. Doug Henningsen with Aldari came in fourth place. In third place with Inari was William Bundy. In second place, must be a newcomer to the scene, Nick Nadavati. Have you heard of him before?
I have not.
It's interesting, he was playing High Fleet Kraken, and so we'll talk about that list in a little bit. But your 2018 Warzone Atlanta winner is none other than Red Powell with Prophets of the Flesh. So let's talk about Nick Nanavati's list here. Everybody was kind of, Nick's bringing Tyranids. So,
yeah.
So the first thing we got to say was something when Ray and I first started the podcast, we always said we want to talk about the players, because, Nick has basically taken top three in multiple major events with four different factions. And it just goes to show you the player skill involved in here, that he can take switch factions and still win at a high level. So what does this winning list that you want to copy look like? Well, for $4.95, you can subscribe. No, just kidding.
We got the...
Yeah, I got it here.
Brown Magic.
Yeah, thank you.
Light.
Yeah, Brown Magic Light. So, you know what? We tease them all the time on the show about it, but hey, if people are willing to buy it, my hat goes off to you, Way to monetize.
I mean, I am part of the group. I got in really early, so I got in at, $10 a month or whatever, but it's a really good resource. I've learned a lot from Nick. I troll Nick a lot, talk to him a bunch. We have our own memes in the group. It's a really good place to, talk about 40K without all of the trash, because you know how those Facebook groups can be.
Yeah.
when it comes to 40K. You post, hey, here's my Thousand Suns list that I got top three at a GT with, and they say, oh, it's not real Thousand Suns because there's no Rubric Marines. And it's like, what are you talking about? Yeah.
I'm in a couple other groups too, and they get upset with, well, you're just a whack player. I'm like, yeah. Why would I post a list for a narrative event? Is this not a list fluffy enough for you? I don't know. Anyway, back to Nick's list here. Kraken Battalion starts with Swarmlord, Old One Eye. Sounds like a weird uncle of mine. But anyway, two units of 19 Gene Stealers and 26 Harmagaunts. And then he comes with a second Kraken Battalion of two Flyrants, three Ripper Squirms. That's three units of three, what I should have said. A six-man Hive Guard unit and three Venom Throbes.
Yep.
So it's interesting, pretty similar to the list we talked about that came in eighth place in the previous tournament. Again, you got that high pressure rush. You've got your campers. You got your long range threat. It's a pretty nasty. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got all the tools.
I think what's interesting about this list is I asked Nick about it. And he doesn't play it very aggressively from what he told me. I know it's his personal philosophy to kind of play more of a reactive play style, as opposed to, you know, players like Matt Root who just really get in the dank and rush you down and force you into making mistakes. But what he was telling me is that it's a very cagey and tricky list. The terrain wasn't what he was hoping for to play it a little trickier, but it still worked out for him. He can sling, you know, he plays his Gene Stealers really conservatively, and then he can sling them across the board 40 inches and charge, you know, just the standard Gene Stealer tricks. Apparently Old One Eye is a gangster. Like he can flip a knight in combat in one turn. So he's running around, you know, he's a character, so he can't be targeted by shooting if he's screened out. He's kind of deliver him in there and he kills knights. But he was also telling me that the list really rewards patience. So he wasn't trying to play overly aggressively. He would just hang out turn one, hide 40 million inches away. Those are his words. Double shoot the Hive Guard and then force the opponent to come to him. And then once the opponent, you know, overextended, then he would make his play. So I thought that was very cool compared to, you know, a lot of NID rushdown lists that you've seen in the past.
Especially with the Gene Stealer blobs, you're expecting the earth-shattering kaboom of this wave of claws to come at you. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if they deploy wrong and you can take advantage of that, then
right,
why not?
So those of you who are sleeping on Old One Eye, quick review of what he does. He's got a 7-inch move, hits on threes in close combat. He does not have a ranged weapon. He's strength 7, toughness 7, 9 wounds, 5 attacks, leadership 7 with a 3-up save. His crushing claws are, so with his, he does not degenerate, by the way. So as a character with 9 wounds, he can hide in the back. So he's always attacking close combat. 5 attacks, remind you. At strength 14, AP minus 3, 3 damage each. It is minus 1 to hit, so he's only hitting half the time. So either way, you're still looking at probably 2 to 3 hits, wounding on twos most of the time, but still causing anywhere from 6 to 9 damage per swing. And then the other option he's got is his Monstrous Scything Talons. You can reroll hits of 1 with this weapon. It's only strength user, so strength 7, darn, but also minus 3 and also causing 3 damage. And then he's got the Thresher's Scythe. It's a little more mundane, strength 4, AP minus 1, 1 damage, but it's a kind of an additional throwaway weapon. Each time the bearer fights, it can make 1 and only 1 attack with this weapon. Make D3 hit rolls for this attack instead of 1. This is in addition to the bearer's attacks. So it's kind of nice. He also has the Immortal Battering Ram rule. So based every time he charges, you take D3 mortal wounds on a 4+. And in the addition, add 1 to all hit rolls for Old One Eye in the fight phase in the same turn he's charged. So remember that minus 1 we talked about with the Monstrous Claws? Yeah, ignore that when he charges. add 1 to his hit rolls in the fight phase for friendly Hifley Carnifexes that are within 6 inches of him. Yikes. And every time you make a hit roll of a 6 for rolled one eye, with exception of the Thresher's Scythe, so that little throwaway attack, you can immediately make 1 additional attack with the same weapon against the same unit. These additional attacks do not confer extra attacks. That could come in handy, actually. So you can...
Yep.
That's almost... With 5 attacks, you're almost looking at +1 attack there. That's pretty nice. Oh, and don't forget, he heals 1 unit, 1 wound per turn. So, pretty nice.
Yeah, I'd love to see a Carnifex spam list with Old One Eye at the head. Just to see how it would do.
Surprised we haven't. I did play, I think it was 2 GTs ago. I had 6 of them. And my poor little elves were just like, ah, what do we do? And I got lucky. Yeah, I got lucky. I beat them, but I got lucky.
I know my teammate Adam, he was running a bunch of Carnifex a while ago, actually almost a year ago, and it was at your guys' DT. Placed really, really well with it, beat some pretty nasty chaos lists on the way there too.
Ray, you've got at least 3 Carnifexes in your collection, correct?
Yes. I have Old One Eye and 2 other Carnifexes.
And then on top of you got a Trigon Prime to and surprise you from below, which is I just can't stand that thing. This big model coming. It used to be neat where you could kind of block it. Now you really can't. So it's like, just pops up and starts eating my units. Don't appreciate that. But after all this talk about Nick, guess what? He didn't actually win the event. He came in 2nd. The winning list is from Red Powell. And as I was joking earlier, he stole my list. I was going to run this weekend. You rat bastard. So it looks something like this. He starts off with a battalion, Prophets of the Flesh. A homunculus with Urian Racketh. And he's got 3 units of racks. Looks like 1 unit of 6 and 2 units of 5. And then he's got a massive block of 10 grotesques. Followed by another unit of 1, 2, 3. Yes, it's 2 units of grotesques. So he's actually running 20 grotesques in this list. Then he follows it up with a 2nd detachment, a Supreme Command Detachment of Aldari, featuring the all BL-10, featuring an Autox Skyrunner, kitted out with anything you can get from the Index, including a Banshee Mask, Laser Lance, and Reaper Launcher, a Farsire Skyrunner, and a Warlock Skyrunner. And then finally, yeah, it's a Spearhead Detachment of Cabal the Black Heart, featuring an Archon. He's going to be your warlord with Labyrinth Cunning and Writ of the Living Muse and 3 Disintegrator Ravagers. So what that I can tell you from personal experience is, 1, Games Workshop, please come out with a new grotesque model. God, the thing. We're running 20 of them. They only have 2 poses. It's like a little monotone. But, that's one of the things, speaking of, you know, what face groups say. It seems like every 3rd post in the Drukhari Facebook page is, check out the conversion I made for grotesques. I'm like, enough. We've seen it. Yes. Previously posted. Thank you. Anyway, one thing I've learned, I was trying to hide mine to in Raiders. So give them a little more mobility and also conserve my drops so I can get first turn. What I have found is units of 4, which fit nicely in a Raider with a homunculus, they hit kind of hard, but the biggest thing is they don't get the wraparound. So I was experimenting with larger units. I was getting much more success. So seeing this guy come in with 2 units of 10, yeah, they're going to hit hard. So that's, by the way, 10 units, 50 attacks at strength 6, minus AP minus 2. So
it's nasty. Yeah.
And they do have a 2-point stratagem where they can reroll to wounds, assuming that doom didn't go off. So you can doom 1 unit and have the other, have everything pile into that thing with the, and then the other grotesque unit can then reroll wounds with their own stratagem and just rip through stuff. And if Urien is nearby, boost them to strength 7, by the way.
Jeez.
Yep.
Is that what you're running this weekend?
Something similar. I think I have 1 unit of 10 instead of 2 units of 10. And then I was thinking, I was still bringing the Talos. Not so much. Their hitting power is still pretty good, but I also like that haywire support for vehicles. Mm-hmm. I don't expect them to gun down a vehicle, but being able to knock off 4 or 5 wounds before I charge is usually a big difference. As I also mentioned, instead of the Ravagers, I'm toying with the idea of a Witch Bomb just to defend myself against hordes of orcs.
Ooh, I love the Witch Bomb. I think we were talking about it before we got on. I think witches are highly underrated, but they're starting to pop up here and there.
Sean Dana made them sexy again, and I think everyone else is trying to jump in on the fun there. And one of the things he said as he worked, one is difficult, but two, especially after turn two, at least one of the units will make their charge. So that's why he brings two. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, I can work with that.
Yeah, and with that nice East Coast terrain too, you can just plop them down behind the line of sight, behind the L's.
Yeah.
Kind of hang out there.
Which is very handy. It's one of the few things I brought with me from the East Coast.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for that. Have you seen Stephen Mitchell's Alpha Legion list that got 5th?
Let's take a look at it here.
It's bizarre to say. I mean, it's almost as bizarre as Mark Perry's list, which I want to talk about. But
so here we go. He starts off with a battalion, a Chaos Space Marines. He's got a Chaos Lord. I was looking for anything. Mark of Khorne with a power axe and a combi bolter. He's got a sorcerer with delightful agonies. That sounds Slaanesh-y.
Pretty bread and butter.
Mark of Slaanesh. Okay, nifty, nifty. 3 units of cultists. The bare minimums look like. Nope. 2 units of 10, 1 unit of 37. And not a cultist more. Then he's got, this is actually similar to the list Don wants me to run. It's got a large unit of Noise Marines. Looks like 20 of them. 17 with Sonic Blasters and 2 with Blast Masters and a Noise Champion with Sonic Blaster himself. Heavy support, he's got 3 Havocs with autocannons. A second unit of Havocs with autocannons and a third heavy support slot filled with Obliterators. But wait, there's more. Second Battalion. Confused. It's a spearhead. Sorry about that. Going Renegades and Heretics. Got a Renegade Commander and 3 Basilisks, which is pretty essential. There's not a lot of long-range shooting in Chaos Space Marines. And then he rounds it out with a Supreme Command Detachment of 1,000 Suns featuring Ahriman on foot, Sorcerer, and the Sorcerer in Terminator armor.
Yep. There's a lot of cool things that stick out to me with this list. I know it's really weird. You're asking yourself, who the hell runs Havocs with autocannons? But, I mean, this guy's making them work. And he's got the Noise Marines as well. The other thing I want to point out is that the 37-man cultist blob has the mark of Tzeentch. They're not Slaanesh. They're Tzeentch. I know there was some controversy earlier because he was casting the spell to make a -1, I believe. And in the Heretic Astartes Codex, that spell affects Heretic Astartes, but in the Thousand Suns Codex, that spell only affects Thousand Suns, and he was using a Thousand Suns Sorcerer to cast it on them. I think on the stream someone mentioned it, and he retroactively used the Chaos Familiar stratagem to switch to the Heretic Astartes version, but I thought that was pretty cool. Because normally you'll see the 40-man brick of Slaanesh cultists, but I think he's double shooting the Noise Marines instead of having to choose between one or the other, and then buffing those Alpha Legion cultists to a further -1, or maybe he gave them the invulnerable. I'm not sure on that one. I'd have to look it up.
Yeah, let's see if he actually wrote out. Doesn't look like he wrote out his spells, but or what psychic powers he took. But interesting with them looking with that Slaanesh sorcerer, I bet you he's using prescience on the noise marine, so giving that additional plus one to hit.
Yep. And the other thing that I thought was cool was the sorcerer and terminator armor. He's an index character, and he gets the familiar for 9 points. And that gives you plus one to cast on the first spell of the phase. So what does he got on there? What does he have on this character? I don't see any spells on it, but
that can come in very handy, especially with Death Hex. If you need to get it off. Yep. Okay. I'm going to go.
Oh, he does have Death Hex on there. Yep. Death Hex, Doombolt. And then, I know when we talk about Mark Perry's list, cause he did the same trick where he's getting the plus one and he would use it either on prescience or on warp time, whichever was the more important situational one. I think that's really cool. Cause I've been using the Cabal of Wizard stratagem for, you know, the crucial warp time. Cause you don't, it goes off on a 7, and even with Armin casting it, it's, you know, you're hoping for a 6, and sometimes the dice don't swing that way. So I thought that was a pretty cool trick. Using the index option with the familiar.
It is interesting. You mentioned Mark Perry. Let's read off that list real quick. Also a Chaos Space Marine. He's using demons in his first battalion with 2 Poxbringers, 3 units of 3 Nurglings. Second battalion is Death Guard. He's got a Demon Prince and a Malignant Plague Caster. And then he's got a unit of... Holy cow, hold on. Thank you.
It's 20.
20 plague, 20 plague marines. Let me say that again. Plague marines. Not plague bearers.
15 with knives. And I think 5 with the bubotic axe.
And then 2 units of poxwalkers. Of, 10 man poxwalker squads. The elite choice. Buy a Logos Purifier. 2 foul blight spawn. And a unit of possessed. Yes, 17 possessed, by the way. And then finally ends it up with a Thousand Suns Patrol featuring a Sorcerer and Terminator armor and 30 Zangors. Bah!
Yeah, that's super weird. Like, who runs 20 Plague Marines, first off? And then who runs Possessed in this economy? I mean, come on. It obviously worked out for him. And I asked him about the list too. It's actually really cool how it works. If you really look at like the spells and the stratagems. So you've got one of the Poxbringers with Shriveling Pox, which lowers the enemy's toughness by 1. So that combined with Veterans of the Long War, you know, you have infantry with the plus 1 to wound, and then you have a knight, you know, being brought down from T8 to T7. You're wounding that on what? I can't do math right now.
Well, I mean, the good news is you're already, by bringing him down, there's enough, you've probably brought enough strength with 8 weapons to bear. So you're already wounding on 4s, bring him down to tough to 7, brings it down to 3s. And now, yeah, plus 1, now you're wounding on 2s if you have the...
Yep. And then you cast Virulent Blessing, which gives you another plus 1 to wound. And it makes you do double damage on wound rolls of 7. So you're looking at plus 2 to wound right now, because Veterans of Long War and Virulent Blessing. Then you combo that again with Blades of Putrefaction, so you're hanging out at plus 3 to wound. And with Blades of Putrefaction, if you throw that on the plague weapons of the Marine squad, you're doing plus 3 to wound. Every roll of a 7 is doing a mortal wound. So every 4 up, you're pimp slapping those guys for mortal wounds. And there's 20 of them. So I think that's outrageous. And of course you protect them with the Cloud of Flies stratagem. You have the Nurgle Loci, or Loki, I don't know how you say that word. I only know it from reading it. But you're doing double damage on 6s to wound. So you put that, well, I think that affects the possessed because they're Nurgle Daemons, or I'm not sure how that one works. But basically every 4 up you do is doing double damage. So there's a lot of crazy synergy going on right there. But basically how he explained it to me is that the list is built around the triple threat. You've got the Possessed, you've got the Plague Marines, you've got the Zangors either hanging out in the back to get Dark Matter Crystalled or in Deep Strike. The Plague Marines and Possessed both have bad matchups, so he'll hide one and Cloud of Flies the other, assuming he goes first. But then the Nurglings are up taking board control, so he can't shoot them because the Nurglings are closer. But outside of line of sight, and he's got a character up in front of the Cloud units so that he's closer to the Cloud unit, but he cannot be shot because the Nurglings are still closer to the enemy. And then, of course, he uses the Chaos Familiar thing on the Sorcerer and Terminator armor, so he has the plus one to cast. And then if he takes the plus one to cast Warlord trait, his first spell for the phase is on a plus two, which he uses for either Prescience or Warp Time, whichever is more needed at the moment. So I thought that was a really, really, really interesting list. I think that wins the weird list that did well of the week.
That is, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not Don. Maybe he'll surprise us next weekend.
Don't know.
But sorry, Don. We got Mark Perry coming for you.
Definitely. It's one of those lists you definitely would have to practice against. And you're like you said, who has those models lying around? But actually, when you think about it, you know, back in the old days, Plague Marines were the ultimate objective holders. So they're probably sitting on a shelf somewhere and not realizing it. So.
Yeah. And that T5 is another point of failure that the enemy's trying to get across. I mean, strength 8 is wounding them on threes. Well, wounding on threes is cancer because ones and twos happen, and they happen a lot. So, well, if you're me.
Well, even if you're basic strength 4, you're wounding on fives. All of a sudden, your firepower just shrinks away.
Yup. And they have the Feel No Pain. So that's a robust unit coming at you with warp time that can't be shot at.
Ouch.
So they're doing gallons and gallons of mortal wounds.
All right. So that is our tournament coverage for this week. After the break, we'll get into our mystery little discussion about what we like to see in Chapter Approved. Be back right after the break. Welcome back after the break. So on the most recent episode of Signals of the Frontline, Reese, who's part of the GW playtest team, had a small throwaway comment that got our attention, and something other than if you're expecting a improvement in some of the older codices, you won't be disappointed with the next Chapter Approved. And then everybody kind of stopped and looked at him, and he went, that's all we can say at this time. Moving on to the next topic. So originally, me being my super pessimistic self that I always am on every episode, assumed that the only thing that would be in there would be the Sisters of Battle Beta Codex. So if there are going to be some new goodies for those older codices, we got a little wish list starting here. So obviously there's a couple factions that are struggling a little bit. The first one that comes to mind is Grey Knights. So gentlemen, if we could make one change in Chapter Approved to make Grey Knights a little more appealing, what would it be?
Oh, I don't know. I don't even know what Grey Knights do. I just know that there's a demon stratagem where I can resurrect a slain unit that's been killed by a Grey Knight, and I will totally use it one day if I ever encounter a Grey Knight player in the wild.
So the thing that kind of hit me right in the head when I looked at a Grey Knights trying to answer this question, a basic Marine is 13 points. A Grey Knight strike team is 21 points. So it's like, what do I get for 8 additional points? I get psychic power that I cast as a unit, and it's severely reduced. It's baby smite. I get an extra shot from my bolter because I have a storm bolter, and essentially I get a force sword, which is basically a power sword that affects D3 damage.
This is base, of course, because you got to remember too that that's base. There's always the option for different weapons.
True, but that's where I start. Let's start with the base first. And I was like, is that worth 8 points? I can tell you the bolter is not. So, and then I looked at a power sword, it's only worth 4 points. So you can throw in the extra D3 damage. I was like, okay, I hate this throwing out the arbitrary points reduction, because I think if you keep doing that, eventually every unit's going to be 1 point. I'm trying to think of what other value brings to the game. So Ray, you've played a lot more Grey Knights than I have.
Let's say real quick, I want to bring up a slightly similar unit that I am familiar with that's sort of the same as a Grey Knight Strike Squad. That's the Rubric Marines. Now, they're, believe it or not, they're cheaper at this point by a single point. What they have,
Power of Chaos.
Now, you can compare and trace off of them. In either case, they're not units you see a whole lot of. In either case, the Rubric Marine doesn't have access to any kind of power or force weapon, except for the sergeant, who has a force staff. What they do have access to is a slightly better bolter. And then they're also the same in that they've got the ability to cast the mini smite. The Thousand Sons Rubrics also have a 5+ invuln. So in my opinion, you see all these differences, and the Thousand Sons are cheaper. I really think that a basic strike squad marine should be reduced by 3 points down to 16.
Sounds fair.
That's my opinion. I asked Don before we started recording what he thought. And in his opinion, he just thinks that they'd be fine if you gave the infantry and the Dread Knights one more attack. I don't think I agree with that. I see what he's saying. You know, if you're going to give an entire army a close combat weapon that's more than just a chainsword, they should have more than one attack. But it's not, one more attack isn't really take the place of, you know, all those extra points.
Yeah, because Rubric Marines also get all his dust too. So, yeah, they're, when you put it like that, the Grey Knights, I know you don't want to say point reduction, but damn, those guys definitely need a break on that.
It's easy to say, oh, just reduce the points. I think I can honestly say that in some cases, going through, when you look through all the codexes, some things should Dark probably Elder. Be costed more. But Dark Elder, in this sorry. Case,
I'm gonna have to edit that part out. So,
I mean, some of the units that you see in large hordes, everybody likes to talk about how certain things are too expensive, but maybe some of those cheaper units should be a little bit more expensive.
Well, I hope that you're not talking about the humble Zangor who was untouched by the last FAQ. I think those are fine at 7 points.
Yeah, no, they're fine at 7 points.
Okay.
I don't think you should see a model cost less than 5, though.
Right. Ooh. What about the humble grot? Humble orc grot. By the way, that's an orc word that was confiscated by Dark Eldar. So, we're taking it back.
You can have it back.
All right.
So I admit I haven't really gone through the orc codex, so I don't know enough about grots.
The thing I hate about the grots is that they're usually standing around a large cannon that can auto hit flyers. So that's what I don't like about the grot.
I'm okay with that. I'm, of course, not biased at all, but you know how that is. Speaking of Dark Eldar, do you think grots need a point increase? I mean, they're only, what, 35 points for what they do?
No. Because the -2 AP is, it's enough to hurt light infantry. They struggle, and they're really not going to take out a vehicle. That's why you need units of 10 to really make that work. They're still infantry, so they're not going to pin a knight in place, and they're still going to get walked over when they fall back. The probably the lack of turn one deep strikes is a big issue, because that's something where you could hide those units and then drive. Like, you could bait your opponent into, especially assault armies. Oh, you're going to brush your stuff forward. Oh yeah, okay, great. And now I'm going to drop my stuff in. Especially with the Ravagers were another big thing. You could hide them off the table for one turn. That really hurts them quite a bit. And I mean, if you really want to, if you really got a grudge against Drukhari in general, the hardest thing you would do is I would change Doom. Is it make it only affect Eldari, Asuriani units.
And it is probably the best spell in the game.
Because that's what the power.
What about?
No, that's what's.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
When you are allowed to, you know, the Disintegrator, Ravagers, when you're strength five, it's like, okay, I'm good against Marines. It's pretty, but I'm not so good against tanks. All of a sudden, if I can reroll to wounds, it gets really strong. Same thing with the Harlequin bikes. You know, those haywire. Because not only are you getting extra chances to roll four ups, but you're getting extra chances to roll six ups, which are D3 mortal wounds each.
Yeah, those things are mean. Things are super mean. What about Cobblites? They're 6 points. 6 points?
You could make an argument. Yeah. So hitting-wise, they hit as hard as a Marine. It's that they have nowhere near the resistance. You know, T3, 5-up armor, and then a 6-up feel no pain. So,
yeah. I mean, they're cheaper than boys, than orc boys. Yeah,
they kind of die in droves quite a bit. And there's not a whole lot of ways to buff Cabalite leadership as there was in the past. So,
right. Well, they're riding around in Venoms anyway, so.
Yeah, that's where it is. Once you knock out their ride and they're kind of sitting put, they're not holding up.
Free butcher's bell point.
Yeah.
What about wish list for Dark Eldar?
I think you need to figure out what does a Hellion do versus a Reaver. If you look at them, the Hellion is basically a witch jump troop, and it's got a +1 strength, AP 0, damage 2 attack. The nice thing about it is that the vehicle that they're carrying on its assault 2 when it comes to shooting, so they can advance and shoot without trouble. The Reaver bikes make up for, you know, they got the extra wound, they have the 4-up armor, and they have the blazing speed. The small problem is if you advance, you can't fire its only gun, which is rapid fire. And so, okay, it's an assault unit or it's a blocking unit. You can't use the combat drugs effectively. Yeah, you can make them +1 strength for their regular hand weapon. So now you have a choice between a strength 4 AP 0 or a strength 4 AP -1 using the blade veins. Because the blade veins are stock strength 4. So you're kind of stuck giving them either a higher movement or extra attack, or maybe make them T5. Realistically, though, I think both units can do a lot better if they come out with some sort of model like a succubus on Skyboard. Because that's the hard part, is all the leadership buffs, they just can't, the leaders can't keep up with their speed. But when I look at those models, I'm like, what am I doing with them? What's their role on the table? Most players I've seen with the Hellions, they're using Eviscerating Flyby to snipe out a character, and they make a Minari with Cult of Strife. So what happens is they kill a unit, Soul Burst, kill another unit, and then use their stratagem to swing a third time. This is, wow, that sounds expensive. Well, they can't take a hit back. So once they do that, they're pretty much done. The Reaver bikes, it's pretty awesome that you can move 18+8 guaranteed, so 26 inches, but they really lack the hitting power they did last edition. The cluster caltrops are not what they used to be, and they can't shoot much better. Like I said, if they're using their max speed, they can't shoot at all unless you're taking a heat lance or a blaster, in which case you only get 2 or 3 of them. Whoop-de-doo. So I'd like to see something change there. Make life a little more interesting.
Yeah. The real thing that I want with Chapter Approved is for it to actually release on time. I mean, let's be real. GW's what, 0-3 now, or 0-2, 0-4 with releases.
Well, the last, you know, the, what was it, the FAQ, you know, they had 26 hours before the deadline. They did fine.
Yeah, I can just imagine all of them in their office just rushing to do it last minute. We're not procrastinating, we swear.
I could just see them arguing back and forth. They're just like, all right, let's take a vote again. And we're back to a 4-4 tie. All right.
Yeah. I think a terrain rules update would be really cool.
Oh.
Chapter approved.
Oh, my God. Don't get me started.
Yeah.
All right. Too late. You got me started. So, yeah. As the resident terrain maker for our local scene, it was, okay, how do we make this a little more interesting? So I know a lot of you guys came back from SoCal. They had some different terrain from previous tournaments. You know, there's the ruin, there's the wood, and there's the battlescape and the crater. That's pretty much your standards when it comes to. And the issue with the last two woods and the battlescape is you got to remember to do these extra rolls every time somebody... I think one is if you charge over it, you take a mortal wound on a 6, and then the other one I think is a -2 to your charge range as well. It's not that bad once you get practicing with it, but making woods that are easy to store and don't get beat up from tournament to tournament is really hard. So that leaves ruins, and then there was all this discussion about what's the difference between a ruin and a building. Well, there really isn't, there's, you know, any rules on that in 8th edition. So it'd be nice to add a couple extras there. You know, the going between levels and vertical movement, you know, that was kind of botched in a couple previous rule changes have addressed that. But it's there's a lot more room to really expand on the terrain rules a little bit. Heck, even just a guideline, this is how much we recommend, or, you know, recommended sizes mm-hmm. and footprints and stuff like that would be a huge help just to what is the expectation of what's on the table.
Yeah. I'd like to, I know a little off topic, but I know ITC, I know they were hinting at a standardized terrain, kind of like Nova has.
They were hinting at it, and then when they talked about SoCal, they changed their mind.
Yeah. Ah.
And that sucks. So, you know, I get it. I've heard it both. So the pro and the against is the pro is cool. I know I won't be playing on Planet Bowling Ball. The con mm-hmm. is I know exactly where every building is going to be on every table, so I can plan my entire army around that.
Right. I think, what if they did it like StarCraft where you have like 4 different map setups and they're just random? You have, you know, map A, map B, map C, map D.
Yeah, that's what we've been doing locally is we've got 3 maps and all 3 maps have the same terrain pieces. They're just in different spots.
Okay.
So
I think at that point, the tricky part is you either end up with actually playing at each different type of table or somehow finding yourself at the same table each and every time.
That's true.
You're absolutely right. It's not easy to random. You know, there's a chance that you end up at the same table 3 times. That's one reason why we don't do, like some tournaments do, light terrain, medium terrain, heavy terrain. Yeah, I got stuck on the heavy terrain 3 times in a row. Was to my disadvantage or was to my advantage. So how do you make sure they get on different tables? The old trick we used to do was round, like it was a 3-round tournament. It's heavy terrain on round 1. And then the TOs would each remove the same pieces of terrain. It's medium terrain on turn 2. And then game 3 was light terrain because then we've already picked up half the terrain. So
the only problem being is that adds on work for the TO.
Oh, yeah. It did. And so it was just another trick. You might want to try that. It's great for smaller tournaments. It stinks for bigger tournaments. Another trick I saw with what Infinity does is they do purposely want you to make the terrain imbalanced so then it makes the decision of which table side to take a true decision. With all these symmetrical tables, it's like, I'm just going to stay in here because I'm lazy. I don't want to walk around the table.
I do like the symmetrical ones, though.
It makes it a little easier, but yeah, Infinity purposely, because Infinity, the way it works is you roll off And let's say you win the roll-off. You either choose first turn or choice of deployment zone.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's like, okay, I got initiative, but I'm in the open. Or do I want to go second, but I get the sniper nest that I need? So it's that's why they say it's they favor unbalanced terrain, that one corner has more terrain than the other. Same thing. Opened up my Sun God kill team for his birthday, and we're going through the rules. They actually have fixed terrain for their missions for match play. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to take notes. What's their intention and what that looks like? But I think it's more of a guideline as opposed to a hard and fast strategic decision.
Yeah. Speaking of terrain, our favorite guys who like to chill and get their two up, Space Marines. What do you think they need? What would you like to see for a chapter approved?
I think when you read the books, Space Marines really shoot down and kill a ton of stuff. And you just don't see that across the board. You know, they're I don't know whether the game kind of caught up to them, because they're now, everybody talks about them, the MAQ, you know, the Marine equivalent. Mm-hmm. And at, you know, is it they're not killing enough? Is it they're not resilient enough for their points? What is it? I can think of some quick fixes, but I just, like, one I thought of is, all right, if Terminator has 5+ invul, make a power armor a 6+. And yeah, I meant power armor. So the it extends to Blood Angels, Dark Angels, and even Chaos Space Marines.
I actually think that's a good idea, all things considered, because in a way, the 3+ save actually has it worse off compared to almost anything. I mean, if you're looking at something that's got a 5+ or a 6+, they've always had it pretty rough, regardless of which edition it was. Because back in the older editions, having something that was AP 5 or 6 was fairly common. Nowadays, what we see is, you know, the AP 1s and 2s, and it's not hard for that 3+ to be equally as worthless.
Yeah, especially with all the volume.
And they're still, you know, more expensive than your average unit that's not a Space Marine. Yeah, it'll have that +1 toughness, but I mean, in most cases where there's an AP, you're going to see a strength that kind of negates the fact that they have toughness 4 instead of toughness 3.
Yeah, and I think for the point, I know I don't want to say the point thing, but you know, it, pretty much a lot of Chaos lists just devolve into, well, I can just take cultists because they're 4 points each, yeah, and they put out way more volume. I can give them a bunch of bonuses, and there's just no reason to take something like a Khorne Berserker or a Noise Marine or even your Bread and Butter Marine. So, yeah.
The other thing I could think of, you hit it right ahead, is the volume, because I'm looking at their chapter tactics. I mean, they're all pretty good. You know, they're it's just a matter of, okay, do I have the tools to use these for, you know, I mean, you got, you know, Raven Guard is similar to Alpha Legion. You get the single rerolled failed to hit or failed to wound and salamanders. You know, everybody's excited about it for orcs. Why aren't they excited about it for salamanders?
Yeah, I think it's just the platform that it's on.
You're probably right. So going back to here, I'm just trying to find it real quick before I say something stupid, but yeah, it's probably too late. Going back to volume of fire, is it something we change the humble bolter to, you know, if you roll 6s to hit, you get an extra shot, you know? So this kind of idea that they're, you know, a little more accurate, you know, in terms of laying down their grouping of their shooting. So when you have that volume of fire that you're laying down a little more shots, kind of like Death of the False Emperor. I'm trying to see if they have, I don't think the Space Marines have a counter to that, like, you know, kill the traitor or something like that. I think they
have a stratagem for it, but it's the fight phase.
Right. you know, Death of the False Emperor is pretty much stock on every Chaos model.
Hell right. Yeah, it is.
Well, what you see instead is, and they shall know no fear, so they have that ability to re-roll the leadership. You don't see that in Chaos.
That is right? True.
At least not just flat out.
You see it in Word Bearers, I think, but no one plays Word Bearers. Because it sucks.
I mean, the only thing I think I only really see Alpha Legion get mentioned. I've seen Iron Warriors, I think, once. Black Legion once or twice, because people want to use something from there. But I don't, especially now, I don't see Night Lords. Don't see Word Bearers. I'm not really seeing any World Eaters, and I'm definitely not seeing... I'm not actually seeing Emperor's Children.
Yeah.
I mean, we might see Slaanesh, but you don't see Emperor's Children.
Yeah. The bread and butter World Eaters detachment was the 555 Berserkers hanging out in two Rhinos with a Dark Apostle and Exalted Champion. It's like a 500-point battalion. Gives you a lot of punch, but that went away with the Knight meta because Rhinos just get picked up. And then I think your bread and butter Black Legion is just cultist spam with Abaddon because they can advance and shoot, and they get full rerolls and they're fearless. But yeah, past that, it's just all Alpha Legion.
Yeah, you don't see the whole, you mentioned, okay, you get the reroll leadership. Suddenly that becomes really cool when the Night Lords, you know, spam starts coming at you. Because, you know, now you take -2/-3 to your leadership. I'll take that reroll. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And I think that's where they kind of missed the mark a little bit. The leadership is, there's some leadership debuffs in a couple codices. Really not seeing that much. I think what I'd like to see, and it's a little too hard to fix now, is go back to sergeants, keeping them at leadership 7 or 8 like they are, but then lowering the base trooper. So now you got to think twice about, do I kill my sergeant or not? I've got to keep him alive. You know, if they were like, if Space Marine, for example, just using as an example, Space Marine sergeants, leadership 8, regular Marines only 7. If you had reduced it to maybe 6 or 5, suddenly that sergeant becomes a hell of a lot more important. So, I'm not sure yet.
I think if you were to do something like lowering the leadership of the basic unit member, it would probably make something like snipers just too good.
Well, yeah, I'm thinking, you know, I always think of snipers as characters, you're right. So yeah, if you take like Night Spear, he's only got one shot, so he kills one guy, kills one. All right, big deal. He kills off the sergeant, now all of a sudden that unit is exposed.
Yeah, and if you've got something like leadership 5, then it's, you, the moment you kill one, there's no way that the person's gonna pass. They're gonna lose one no matter what.
Right, you got a good point there. Okay, we'll scratch that idea. I still think, yeah, Volume of Fire might be the, because that's when you look at the other successful elite codices. You look at like Custodes, you know, they make up for it with, you know, they have one or two guys that have ton of shots. So they, you know, 3 shots, 4 shots, lots of storm bolters lying around. And I hate to see the bolter just add, you know, tack on additional shots, because there's a big difference between rapid fire 1 and rapid fire 2.
Yeah.
And that's what I was thinking, like, yeah, that if you roll 6 to hit, you get an extra attack type thing.
Yeah. I think a good example of power armor is Sisters of Battle, because they're a very, very cheap platform, rocking the 3-up, and they get access to storm bolters. No one has the models for it. But hopefully that'll change. I think with chapter approved, my biggest wish list is for a Sisters of Battle versus Chaos Renegades box. That would be cool.
Other things.
What about Necrons? Those guys need some help.
I still think that they need to turn the reanimation protocol back into a feel no pain style role.
I agree.
What they have now is it's even more clunky than the old 5th edition version. Because there's just so much bookkeeping you have to do. A lot of times when I played, I found myself keeping 2 dice with each squad. Because I'd have to have one to keep. I need one dice to keep track of how many died that round. Mm-hmm. And then how many have died total.
Wow. Yeah, I still do the old school, put my Necron sideways. You know, like if I knock them down to remember where they are at the end of the phase. But I always forget it's not the end of the phase. Like, let's say I lost 4 guys. 2 of them get reanimated. I still get 2 more in reanimation rolls next turn. I was like, oh, yeah, that's so you end up using. Now there's all these models kind of lying around. Oh, it's a mess.
And then add in the fact that when you roll at the end for like the morale tests, if you have guys go off on that, they stay off.
Yeah, we need a separate dead pile. So
that's another thing you have to keep in mind. Yeah.
It's a pain in the neck.
So it just needs to become they just need to take it back to being a feel no pain. It'd be one thing if they were trying to avoid giving those kinds of saves, but we're actually seeing them a lot. You know, you got Death Guard, pretty much the entire Death Guard faction has that.
Yep.
And then you're seeing the different chapter tactic style stuff. At least a lot of them have one group in a codex that'll have that. You like Iron Hands. I can't think of any of the others at the moment, but there are others.
Yeah.
That have that. So
yeah.
If you're gonna go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say. I mean, you have your examples of because Necrons are supposed to be durable, and you have Death Guard pulling off the durability very well. So yeah, I agree with you. A feel no pain on Necrons would go a long way for them.
Yeah. I miss the old days where my regular Necron warriors were a threat to vehicles. And
that's another thing. Yeah.
And one of the things where I think a lot of players hear Xenos players quote unquote whining is, okay, Necrons, if I have this shortcoming, I'll just ally in. Yeah, I don't have an option. And so you need everything in your mono codex, and everybody gets all, everybody should be playing mono codex. No, you shouldn't. But just make sure that if you're in this situation, that your codex has those options. And so one thing I would love to see is bring back the Gauss blaster, or all the Gauss weapons. I would think it would be cool, you know, 2 wound rolls of a 6 or +1 damage. Because now you're auto wounding, you know, if you're attacking infantry with it, most infantry is 1 wound models anyway. Mm-hmm. Big deal. Okay. All right. They don't bleed over, so the 6s don't mean anything. But then if I'm attacking vehicles where they have multiple, now I'm getting the volume of fire from large phalanxes of warriors, the days of old, I have chances to bring it down because I'm getting additional wounds onto this tank, which is significantly different from Tesla, which is if, you know, 6s to hit, you start doing all this, all these extra hits, but make it a very different from there. So,
right. Moving into just Xenos in general, I think that I honestly think that if you're going to have it where some groups have the ability to take in allies to help with their shortcomings, then if you're going to have factions who can't do that, they should be able to have some sort of access to it. So, you know, you've got the knights that can be taken for Chaos or Imperium, and they do what they do, but, you know, can you honestly say that the orcs have that exact same option as of right now? I honestly don't know, but I don't know if the Stompa, the Gorgonaut, or the Morgonaut have the same capabilities as the various knights. Right.
I mean, the Gorgonaut.
And they don't have any.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying they have no ally right. choices.
Yeah. I mean, the Gorgonaut's basically a Gallant at this point, though. So, pretty happy there. But the late Codex helped out a lot with that.
Any other glares that really need some help, or just something that's like, oh my god, that needs to be toned down?
I think the Humble Shining Spear could use a slight increase in points. Just for how much they do, and just the equivalent of other units. They're just really, really good.
Yeah, it's another one. Going back to my example of the Reaver bike, I was like, why are the Shining Spears so much better than Reavers? Yep,
exactly.
Oh, I get it. They can shoot the bike gun, and the pilot can shoot the weapon they have with them. Reavers can't do that because it's a pistol. You know, it's an either or. I'm like, there we go. So essentially, and then on top of it, you can soul burst them if you take an Ari.
Just like, oh crap. Fly 10 million inches, land in front of the Humble pink horror screen, shoot them all to hell, charge in, kill Armin, run away. Well, soul burst away. Not that I'm salty about that. That's never happened to me, but.
Of course not. Yeah. I mean, you should just go have this. You know, I'm all super excited for all these new models that are coming out in Black Fortress, but I'm like, could we have gotten some plastic Aspect Warriors, please?
Yeah.
You know, it's can we get some additional, you know, they keep rumoring about a Inari Codex. How about a unique Inari unit? Or maybe there's an Aspect Warrior that this is unique to Inari type thing. Move the story ahead a little bit. Yay, we have spindle drones. Whoopee!
Yeah. I think they are moving the story a little bit. I mean, a lot, obviously, with 8th edition. You got a lot of things going on. Dark Imperium 2 is out. It's pretty cool. And then with the Blackstone Fortresses, I think Abaddon crashed his into Cadia. He gifted her on Blackheart the other one. And then this new one was just discovered. So, should be pretty cool, lore wise.
Yeah, same thing with the Planet Vigilis. So yeah, be cool to see some new stuff there. But yeah, you know, it's just, you know, I get it. There's only so many plastic molds they can afford to make in a calendar year, just because of. And I'm just like, all right, we've got new Rattlings. Yay.
I'm cross my fingers for Plastic Sisters, though.
Yeah, Plastic Sisters it's going to be awesome. Like I keep saying, Plastic Chosen would be great. You know, that could be a great way to introduce the Chaos Primaris Marine. You know, that's
Are Chosen Marine. Only metal?
They don't exist.
No. The only time we've ever seen Chosen is for the Dark Vengeance box that came out for 6th edition. Okay. They were those push fit. This is the only way you can have them.
I have a bunch of their wings, and I use them as my jump packs. It's the only use I found for them.
That's possessed.
Oh, whoops. My bad. I don't even know my own army.
Yeah. Mine are all... because I did a Fallen themed army, so mine are all Dark Angel Vanguard vets or whatever they are, the robed guys. So with Chaos backpacks and Chaos shoulder pads. And I used to do.
And to be fair, it's about as accurate as you can get.
Yeah, I mean they stand out from the regular Chaos Space Marine, and you know the whole MO is I see your cultist spam, I raise you 3 units of 4 plasma. Troopers and standing around Abaddon, so yeah, they get the reroll hits. And it used to work in 5th edition, it's not quite that good in 8th edition, so but yeah, those are some of the thoughts. If you guys have any additional thoughts out there, let us know on our Facebook page. You can find us at Exterminatus Podcast. But always, yeah, curious as we get some more rumors, any early leaks of what's going to be in chapter approved, but those are some of the changes we'd like to see. And so again, any thoughts to the conversation, let us know. After the break, we'll go over the ITC top 10 as well as upcoming ITC events. Welcome back after the break. Let's quick look at your ITC top 10, and they have been updated to reflect the events that occurred at the SoCal Open. So coming in 10th place is John Lennon, hanging in 10th place at 627 points. 9th place, Daniel Olivas with a 10-point lead over John. 13-point lead over Daniel is Archon Skari, holding down the 8th place. Newly changed to Harlequins is Joshua Death. He has got a 1-point lead over Archon Skari. After his big win at SoCal Open, Brandon Grant leaps to 6th place with a 2-point lead over Joshua Death. In 5th place, Nick Rose, he's got a commanding lead, 22 points over Brandon Grant. Matt Root, who will make an appearance at the Renegade GT this coming weekend, supposedly with Orcs. We're excited to see what that will look like. He also has a 20-point lead over Nick Rose. 5 points above Matt Root is Trent Northington in 3rd place. 2nd place, with a massive 45-point lead, is Mike Porter from London. And last but not least, with an 11-point lead, still your leader for the ITC Top 10, none other than Nick Nonavati with List to be Determined Later. So coming up next weekend, Ray, what events do we have in the ITC?
We've got the Renegade Open in Plymouth, Minnesota. The 4th annual Hobbytown Smackdown in Fresno, California. At the There Will Be Blood GT in Glendale, Arizona. And then the Imps Open 2018 in Lincoln, England.
Very cool.
Nice.
So, Josh, will you be making an appearance at our GT this weekend?
Absolutely. I want to pimp it out for everyone. November 17th, Phoenix, Arizona or Glendale?
Glendale.
We'll be in Glendale, Arizona, November 17th. It's Eric's event. Be there. It's going to be awesome. Yeah, I'm actually really hyped for the Renegade Open as well because there's a lot of big names going there. It's 100-ish players. I think it's the first event that we're going to see the Orc Codex come out of hiding and start crumping people. I know Stephen Pamprin is playing Orcs and Matt Root is rumored to be playing Orcs. So that'll be very, very cool to see.
Love looking at their mission format too. It's a very unique system, and I really like the way it plays. So it's always good to see the matchups, and especially say with the new meta with the Orc Codex coming out, being able to choose your mission throughout the rounds is pretty clever. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned before, we had our own GT this coming weekend. Tickets are still available. They are being sold currently on Best Coast Pairings, as well as our big major. We will be kicking off the 2019 ITC season. Yes, believe it or not, it's only 5 months away. So we are exactly 4 weeks after LVO. It will be March 2nd and 3rd. Scorched Earth Open. Take a look at BCP for your tickets available. We have a brand new venue, lots of new terrain, and really looking forward to starting off the 2019 season in style. So looking forward to seeing you guys there. Josh, I want to thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
So again, thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast. If you'd like to leave a review, you can hit us up on iTunes or our Facebook page. In the meantime, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast.